Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report, and another daily editorial that we are recording on Canadian Thanksgiving and down in the US, Columbus Day and Indigenous Peoples Day. So markets in Canada are closed. They are open in the US, but usually a bit thinner trading we see on days like today. So gives us the opportunity to take a little step back and talk about some of the bigger trends, I think, that are in the markets right now. Chad and I are chatting with John Rubino, founder and editor of the Dollar Collapse website. Now, John, I'm going to throw a couple things at you here. One being oil, crude, right around that $81 a barrel level. So that continues to move higher. The U.S. dollar, that's also up today. That's in and around the mid-94s, very close to having a breakout here. And in all fairness, look, the dollar has been on in an uptrend since June, and now it's looking to break a fairly strong resistance level. Now, John, let's start with these two here, because a bit of cross currents, energy prices moving higher, but the dollar's also moving higher. What do you take away from this environment?
Hey, Corey. Hey, Chad. I'm confused in a nutshell, because you're right. There are all these cross currents that point in different directions, and they're all pretty legitimate, because when energy prices are doing what they're doing right now. And by the way, oil is up, but it's just a pale shadow of how much coal and natural gas are up. So oil is sort of the stable story in the energy market right now, because the other energy sources are going up even more. But normally, spiking energy prices is a sign of rising inflation, which should be bad for the dollar, right? Rising inflation means the value of the currency is going down. That's not happening this time. And besides energy, there are all kinds of other things going on that are notable out there, because there are lots of other shortages and spiking prices. Fertilizer, for instance, is really expensive now. Food prices are rising, at least in the U.S., and the supply chains are all messed up. So there are shortages of computer chips that are giving us a shortage of cars, which is giving us spiking used car prices. Used cars are like 50% more expensive than they were a couple of years ago. And there are labor shortages out there where companies, in order to have enough people to fill the orders coming in, have to pay way up for new workers now, or accept a lot less experienced or otherwise competent workers to do the job. You know, so you're seeing wage inflation at the same time. All of that is inflationary. But at the same time, our jobs numbers, for some reason in the U.S., I guess because of the labor shortage, they're disappointing. And the Evergrande stuff in China, where you've got a big real estate developer that is imploding, and that's taking down the other real estate developers, which is leading to very possibly a big bond market crisis. That's really deflationary. And so Goldman Sachs right now has lowered its U.S. GDP projection dramatically from a pretty strong number to a very weak number. So it's really not clear which of those two forces is winning, you know, because the inflationary forces are very powerful and the deflationary forces are very powerful. And as you mentioned, the dollar being way up, that's a deflationary thing. You know, that affects that. That's like us exporting our deflation to the rest of the world. So it's really not clear how this plays out in the short run. I think I'm as confused as anybody else right now.
Well, John, there are a lot of confusing cross currents, as you just painted the picture well. And with the dollar rising higher, one thought that comes to mind is that it's really the dollar index that is going higher. But as we've discussed many times on here, it's really your dollar's purchasing power that's important. Because so while the dollar index may be higher, which would lead to people to believe it's deflationary, it's really just higher in relation to other currencies. So what do you think about the fact that, yes, the dollar index is higher, which does seem deflationary, but at the same time, the CPI numbers have been high for the last, 6 months, and probably going to stay elevated, higher than they were before the pandemic started. So those are clearly inflationary. And then you also have a resurgence of tons of articles and tons of different pundits talking about stagflation, where we have inflationary pressures at the same time we have slowing growth. Do you think it's a tug of war between inflation, deflation, and stagflation? What do you make of it?
Well, yeah, all of that stuff is out there. You have very good indicators pointing in lots of different directions right now. So I wouldn't even hazard a guess about where we are 3 months from now, because there's just so much stuff going on. So I don't know. I mean, See, further out, it actually gets clearer because we're still taking on insane amounts of debt, which is the main thing, right? The more debt we take on, the greater the future financial instability we'll see, and the greater need for governments to bail out everybody in sight. So that's all coming, you know? We're going to reach a point where there is some kind of disruption in the financial markets that lead the U.S. and Europe and Canada and Great Britain and Japan and China to all just come in with massive amounts of new currency creation and targeted bailouts to whoever's falling apart the most egregiously. So we'll be back there pretty soon. And that's very inflationary since, a debt crisis of some sort can be huge in this kind of a market, but it's also finite. You know, there's a certain amount of debt out there. And that's all there is. But the money supply increase that they can throw at that is infinite. You know, you can create as many new dollars as you want to at the Federal Reserve and just toss them into the system. So the eventual big bailouts will be massively inflationary. But how we get from here to there is right now kind of anybody's guess. You know, we could see interest rates spike because of rising inflation and that tips things over, or a bond market crisis in China that metastasizes to the rest of the world, or a rising dollar that blows up the emerging markets that borrowed a bunch of dollars on the assumption that dollars would get cheaper and they could pay them back more easily. You know, all of that stuff is out there waiting to happen. Or, you know, just a garden variety stock market crash, with stocks now being as richly valued as they've ever been, including 1999 and 2006. So any of that stuff can happen. Some of it will happen at some point. But in the meantime, making sense of what's happening right now is very difficult.
So, John, when it comes to that longer term outlook there, where debt keeps on growing and that's eventually going to lead into a crash, what do you take away from how investors get positioned for that? Because I realize that you can take some safety in gold, but seems like there are other vehicles out there right now that people are using as safe plays. And quite frankly, because of how it seems like almost fast money these markets are, where traders get into one position, out of that, they don't really have a bias anywhere. Is now the time to start taking some of those defensive positions, or should we be trying to ride that wave higher because money's being made in, well, other sectors?
Well, I would have said start being defensive 5 years ago. So, you know, my credibility when it comes to the timing of stuff like this is not good. But you know, it seems reasonable that in the face of extreme uncertainty and rising volatility, that defensiveness makes sense. It could be that that causes you to leave some money on the table when Amazon goes up another 50%, or you know, Bitcoin goes to 100,000 from 55,000 today. But you also can sleep at night knowing that you are minimizing your risk of an 85% decline in your nest egg. And historically, times like this, when the market had this kind of a profile, that was a good time to be defensive. And what that means is real assets. You know, gold and silver always is the thing you go to mainly in this kind of an environment. But a really well chosen rental house, maybe farmland, things like that, and cash to an extent is very useful in times like this because it gives you flexibility. So things like that historically protected people from periods of extreme financial market volatility. And they probably will again, but the question is, will they do it this year? that's really hard to know. But over time, I think it makes sense, no matter where you're starting, for you to be moving in the direction of defensiveness going forward. So you don't have to jump with both feet into it right now, but you should be kind of dollar cost averaging into gold and silver and maybe looking at the really, really high quality related mining companies. Like I said, maybe a rental house in a college town or something like that. But you don't have to do it all at once because we really can't know what's going to happen next week. But you should be moving in that direction wherever you're starting from.
Well, John, as you mentioned, you know, taking a defensive stance, you know, brings up safe havens, which, of course, gold and silver are part of. Bonds that you mentioned, though, that may be in a whirlwind with this Evergrande thing, are also going to face the tapering decision that the Fed is going to be announcing in November. So the question will be, as they pull back their accommodative policies, and 120 billion a month turns into 90 billion a month, turns into 60 billion a month, and then eventually down to zero. One question we've asked a lot of people is, who's going to buy all those bonds, and could it be the safe haven aspect? There's also people using cryptocurrencies as a safe haven from their vantage point. And there's some people that are saying, hey, as an inflation hedge, I'll just stick with energy because energy's done well. So there just seems to be even a lot of cross currents as far as what people consider a safe haven. Some people consider the tech stocks like Apple that you mentioned a safe haven. And then, of course, some people are going to cash, which could be what's spiking the dollar. So are the rules of what a safe haven is changing? And how will the prime mover, the Fed, affect things as they move forward towards this November Fed meeting?
Well, those are really good points, because you're right. There's a lot of difference of opinion about what constitutes a safe haven asset in this world. Somebody like Warren Buffett would say, well, obviously it's a multinational company that has pricing power. And so it can raise its prices sufficient to handle basically anything that the world throws at it. And there's something to be said for that, except that in prior market crashes, these big safe haven multinationals got swept down with everybody else. You know, you had after the dot-com bubble burst in 2000, you had the 90% club, which was stocks that went down by 90% when the bubble burst. And there were a lot of big names on that list. So you could be in Cisco Systems or something like that, one of the stars of the dot-com bubble, and still lose 90% of your money when the market tanks. So they were not safe havens then. And I suspect that today's crop of big tech won't be safe havens this time around. You know, you need something that that doesn't have counterparty risk, that doesn't depend on anybody keeping a promise for it to work out. And that really narrows it down when you think of it that way, because sure, Google is a very successful company, but it's also trading at a valuation that could be 50% lower and still look fair based on its current earnings. So there's a big air pocket under that stock, along with all the other stocks that are Google's peers. Whereas, you know, gold and silver have just been money forever, and they've held their value basically forever, no matter what. And so there's a very big difference between those two concepts when considered as safe haven assets. And I think, you know, one is definitely a safe haven. The other is only a safe haven in certain circumstances. So I would want to go with in this kind of a world, I would want to go with the more certain safe haven, although it is completely possible that you can make money in the other so-called safe havens, because they might go up as well as down in whatever's coming. I just don't think it's as certain with them as it is with something like gold and silver. And also with energy assets, they're kind of in between somewhere, because they tend to, you know, energy is a real thing. We're going to need it going forward. If there's that much oil in the ground, inflation doesn't affect that, you know, it'll still be there when you go to get it. And so that's something that even with the transition to alternative energy, fossil fuel companies that have reserves will probably get the chance to pump out and sell their reserves at good prices, at least in the coming decade. And so they might be good safe haven assets too. But yeah, I agree with you that there are a lot of different opinions out there now. And cryptos, of course, behave like tech stocks, even though they're designed to be forms of sound money. So we kind of have to find out what they are with a little bit more experience. They're very new in this market, and they're an evolving, emerging asset class. So it's not clear where they end up. You know, it could easily be that in the next market crash, Bitcoin goes down by 70%, or it could be that it holds its own or goes up. We just don't know how that's going to play out yet. So it's not a safe haven from that point of view, in the sense that you just don't know what it's going to do. But it is a very interesting asset class for a lot of other reasons.
Well, John, you brought up a key distinction there, and that was that not having that third-party counterparty risk, which gold and silver provide, but I would argue that bonds have a third-party counterparty risk, that the nations they back, as do currencies, and as do the tech stocks and even the oil stocks. So the only ones on there other than gold and silver that don't have a third-party risk would be the cryptos you just mentioned, something like a Bitcoin, which is decentralized, or an Ethereum, where they don't really have that third-party risk, but then they have the the crypto exchange risk, where you could think you have crypto, but the custodian gets hacked or gives away your coins to the wrong person. So there's very few options for investors to hide. And I think people are less interested in making money right now, more interested in preserving it. So if the Fed goes ahead with the tapering in November and they move forward with that track, what do you think that will do to the general markets? And will any of them migrate over to the precious metals as a final question here?
Well, I think if the Fed actually goes through with tapering, then we'll get a massive taper tantrum. And that usually manifests as a big stock market decline that spooks the Fed into taking back the taper and going back to massive ease. You know, I think that will happen. But, you know, a lot of the things that are going on out there now, especially the Evergrande thing, which could affect China dramatically, which in turn would affect the global economy. It's hard to see the big central banks tightening with something like that going on. So, I think the Federal Reserve governors are always confused because they really don't understand the world they live in. But I think they're more confused than usual right now. So I think the minutes of the Fed debates are going to be very interesting going forward, because they don't want to tighten into a credit crisis, right? But they also don't want to not tighten while an inflationary spiral is building up. And they don't know any better than us about what all this stuff means and where it's going. So they're, you know, we'll see. I find it hard to believe that they're actually going to tighten aggressively or even really taper at all, even though they say they're going to. And if they do it, then I think the markets will react in a very extreme way. And we'll be back in 2008, 2009, or March of 2020, or, you know, one of those really scary times when the stock market, just for no apparent reason, tanks and the Fed has to step in again, with the difference being that the numbers get bigger each time and the risks and fragility grow exponentially as our debts rise. So each time is worse than the last time. And the consequences of a mistake are that much bigger. So, we're heading into that world. We're in that world, but we're heading more deeply into it. And there really is no solution other than having the gigantic crash and then resetting the currency, doing all that stuff that nobody in charge wants to do, because they end up being the Herbert Hoovers of this generation's epic crash.
Well, and I guess the question is then, when's that big crash going to come, right? And when's that reset of the financial system going to come? Because, John, I've heard about it my whole life in these markets. So
hey,
when is
I've
that
been talking
going to
about
come,
it for
right?
most of your life.
A lot of the gold bugs that are sitting there waiting for that, they've been waiting a long time too. So I get the real question is, are you a speculator right now? Are you trying to make money with your cash, or are you just trying to protect it? And that is a very different strategy, I think, that people need to take. And again, do you think that these markets are going to crash? Just how hard are they going to crash, and when? A lot of question marks right now, but I still would recommend people kind of following those trends, follow where the money's going, and have some money safely positioned. But there are opportunities out there to be making money in these markets as well. John, great chatting with you as always, buddy. Thanks for taking time on this Thanksgiving in Canada and this Indigenous Peoples Day in the U.S. John, we'll chat again in another couple weeks. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, Corey. Thanks, Chad. See ya.